Welcome to After Hours on a muggy Sunday night. I've known Jerry Brennan for some time and met him, I think, not when he wrote his first book, but when he started Tortoise Books. And we'll talk a little about Tortoise Books and a lot about the latest in his series that it's part of the Altered Space series, and it's about space. I'm just going to read you the beginning of his latest book, Alone on the Moon, A Soviet Lunar Odyssey. Ready? We cannot see anything through the windows of our spacecraft. We are coasting through cosmic space between the Earth and Moon. One might expect glorious vistas, the cloud-mottled blue of our home, the intricately pockmarked gray of our destination. But our orientation's wrong for that. The nose of the spaceship is pointed at the moon, and the whole assembly's spinning slowly about the roll axis, like a pig roasting on a spit. So the various portholes are taking their turns, pointing at the blinding sun, or off into the blackness of space. Jerry Brennan, welcome to the show. That's nice writing.
Thank you, Rick.
This whole space series, I'd love to tell you, we are not the same age. I'm considerably older than you. But what has spurred, what fired your interest in space? For me, at one point, it was not just seeing the moon landing. It was actually seeing the right stuff. That's what did it for me. I haven't written any books about it, but that's what first really hooked me.
We have that in common, actually, because The Right Stuff was the first movie I saw in the theaters when it came out in 1983, and I was absolutely blown away. I was, it's a fantastic piece of history as myth making.
Sure.
You know, and it really just sucks you in. And as a historian, I came to kind of realize, like, okay, they fudged this, they did this, you know, but you appreciate it as a storyteller. And so I was just absolutely rapt, like, watching that movie. My mom said I talked about it for 2 solid weeks afterwards. And then.
Did you read the book?
I did read the book
eventually,
later,
yeah.
And it is one of the few cases where I think the movie's better. But then in 86, you know, a lot of people forget that the Challenger disaster happened within 48 hours of the Bears winning the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it was the first world event where I can remember exactly where I was. I was in third grade, and I can remember just that hesitation in the principal's voice.
When he announced it to the whole school.
Because we'd been following in the weekly readers, like, oh, the teacher's going up. We're like, oh, wow, you know. And then, you know, he just, you know, Principal Tantillo in Our Lady of the Wayside in the suburbs here. And he just didn't, like, you heard that hesitation, like, he just didn't know how to tell us. And so I had this, you know, big space tragedy. But then my family, my father, God bless him, was a super successful executive. We moved to Orlando
close
in 87.
By. Yeah.
And I believe we watched the first post-Challenger launch.
Yeah, because there was a lag after the Challenger.
Yeah, about 2.5 years. So,
wow.
Yeah, so a lot of triumph and tragedy in my space.
Well, because you have devoted your writing talents to outer space, basically, not to make light of it, to outer space.
Yeah, for the past 9 years, yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, we'll get into the book in more detail. You're a West Point grad, then you're a Columbia University Journalism School grad. Did you want, I'm dead serious about this, did you want to be an astronaut at any point?
I did, yes, very early.
You would think West Point might be a path.
Yeah, but my eyes were bad, so I kind of knew long before that I wouldn't be quite on that path. But it was something that was on my mind very much as a kid.
So you didn't go on the path, going to Columbia and studying journalism. You didn't go on the path to want to be a reporter, did you?
I'm a recovering alcoholic now. At the time, I was not a recovering alcoholic, and just the notion of asking people questions was terrifying to me. I've done a lot of reporting for these books. You know, I've put the skills to use.
Oh my God, we'll talk about the research. It must be intense and deep.
Yeah,
deep.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to Jerry Brennan in the next segment about how he came to found Tortoise Books. His books, and I've had you on to talk about not all in this series, but this last one is just brilliant. I think we've been on and talked about a couple in the series. These books could be published by any publisher who was smart enough to grab them. They're published by his own imprint, Tortoise Books. We'll talk more about Tortoise Books and more about, I won't read anymore, but we'll talk about Alone on the Moon, A Soviet Lunar Odyssey, and what it's like to sometimes write about, to fictionalize real people. That I'm fascinated with. That I'm fascinated with.
So
please stay tuned. Welcome back. We're talking about writing, and we're talking about outer space, and we're talking about publishing. Jerry Brennan, when did you start Tortoise Books, and why?
In 2012.
And that could be 4 hours, I'm sure.
Yeah. Long story short, in 2012, I had a manuscript that I had shopped around, and I had gotten it in front of agents, and I'd only gotten in front of people where there was like a friend of a friend kind of connection.
Sure,
and
sure.
Then it was like, oh my gosh, this is great. We never get stuff that's in this good a shape. And I got ghosted by a couple and like never got an explanation. And I was like, I was getting married and I had a baby on the way. And I was like, you know what? I should get this out. But my gut told me there were other people in the same boat.
No question.
And so, yeah, my first two authors, Gianno Cromley, he had an agent, and he was butting heads with the agent about how to edit his book. And he's done two books with us now. And Darren Doyle had already had a book on St. Martin's, but, you know, if it doesn't, I don't know if it just didn't sell or whatever, but...
Well, in some cases with the big printers, it's just simply not promoted correctly.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. So you started Tortoise Books. On the website, and you can, ladies and gentlemen, go to tortoisebooks.com, and you can see a lot of it. But he says... Jerry writes, Tortoise Books focuses on quality, not quantity. I have had a number of your authors on. Joe Peterson is one. Dmitry Samarov is another. And do not look up Tortoise Books, look up the address and bury this guy in the manuscript of your aunt's story about growing up in the old town or something. It's been successful, has it not? I mean, it's got to be hard.
We have a distributor now. Like, we have, you know, to me, getting a distributor was really fantastic just because there's only so much you can do yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've got a lot of fantastic indie bookstores here in Chicago, like Bookseller and Book Ends and Beginnings and Evanston, Women and Children First. Like, we've got a lot of really good friends. But there's only so many people you can call and ask to stock your books. So, like,
what do you look for? That's a kind of broad umbrella. Give you a Tortoise Book on quality, not quantity. What is it? Are you simply looking at, if a manuscript comes in? I'm sure you get a number of manuscripts.
Oh, yeah.
Is it something, if you like it, you'll publish it?
It's... You know, I try to read what comes in, or we have a couple editors that I'll farm stuff off to them if I can't get to everything. The stuff has to kind of tap me on the shoulder and say, like, keep reading me, you know, because there's a lot of B+ stuff out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, God bless them. You know, it's hard to get to that point. You know, I'd rather read a B+ book than an F book, but... you know, I don't want to publish anything unless I just can't bear the thought of somebody else publishing it.
Well, but also something that you publish, you want to be proud of what you publish.
Oh, yeah, of
course. No question.
Yeah.
But you also, talk to me a little about, I know you were out at Pitchfork.
Yeah.
I don't know if any other booksellers or publishers were out at Pitchfork, but I find that really intriguing because that's a younger crowd that you don't assume is a book-buying crowd. Forgive my, you know, low opinion. But it's also, you have to have, when you publish, some commercial considerations too, do you not? I mean, you're in the business of making a profit. You're not a lottery winner who's tossing their dough away.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned Pitchfork. I'm wearing a shirt from The National, which is a favorite band of mine. in music, it's a lot more common for people to kind of start their own record labels if
sure,
they don't,
especially these days.
Know,
yeah,
yeah. If they don't have an outlet, and I feel like in books it's a little more like looked down upon. But Pitchfork, I mean, you know, people do love books in the indie crowd, and like that's our vibe too. Like is. You know, trying to make indie publishing as hip as indie rock. You know?
What was the interaction like with the crowd?
Had you
been at Pitchfork before, or was this your first time?
I mean, I'd been there as an attendee a lot.
Right.
Yeah, I hadn't sold books there. It was nice. It was, you know, there were, you know, sometimes you see friends that you haven't seen in years,
sure.
You know, and it was... You know, it's a little different than like LitFest, because like LitFest, people are there to buy books.
To buy books, yeah.
And Pitchfork, sometimes people are like, I don't want to carry this around all day. So.
Hey, here's a free bag. Here's a free bag to carry it in. You, your latest, Alone on the Moon, A Soviet Lunar Odyssey, there's deep, deep research involved in this thing, I think.
Yeah.
Because it reads, I mean, just that opening paragraph I read is not something you can just dream up, I don't think.
No.
What is your research? Where do you go?
You always go for primary sources, you know, as a historian and a, you know, to the extent that I'm a journalist, you know, you try to get to the source. I reread Michael Collins's memoirs.
The astronaut, sure.
Fantastic guy. I actually got to meet him back in 2016.
Through your West Point connection?
There's a fantastic group called, Novographics, I think, in Tucson, and they do a space fest where you can meet a lot of the astronauts and stuff. This one, you know, the Soviet ones were a little tougher because my narrator, Boris Volynov, is not as well known as some of the other cosmonauts.
Yuri Gagarin or somebody who you've written about, too.
Yeah, and him I actually tracked down a researcher in the Netherlands, Bert Vies, that a lot of people had cited him in their books. And actually got, he gave me some transcripts of interviews with Volynov that I was able to...
Oh, those must have been very helpful helpfully inspiring.
Yeah.
You write in the back, I wanted to visit Moscow before I wrote this, but COVID came and all that stuff. I can understand why you wouldn't want to visit Moscow. I'm thinking maybe Dmitry Samarov, who is one of your authors and is a Russian Jew, gave you tremendous insights into... one of your characters, or both of them.
He gave me brief but tremendously helpful advice, which was to read Life and Fate by Vasily Grossman, which is a hugely underappreciated book. He was a war correspondent, and he basically wrote, you know, World War II's War and Peace from, you know, and not like Tolstoy wrote War and Peace,
right,
like years after the war. And Grossman wrote it from firsthand experience as a correspondent, and it was suppressed by the authorities, and it was like smuggled out of Russia on like mimeographed versions or whatever. And it's a fantastic book. Yeah. Yeah. It was excellent. Excellent help.
When you're writing about real people, this isn't, you can't label this science fiction. You know what I mean? I can't. You don't either, do you?
I try to call it literary alternate history science fiction.
Okay.
Alternate historical science fiction.
Because Americans are the only people to have landed on the moon.
Among
many differences in here. There are the two main characters in this book are, one of the guys was not supposed to go up, and that's a fascinating thing that all of a sudden he is called upon to do this once in a lifetime kind of thing, and they don't get along.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the really fascinating subtexts of the book. Did that happen? Was that in your initial conception, or
Volynov? Actually, frankly, I picked him because my sobriety date is December 18th and is his birthday.
That's great.
I didn't know very much about him at all. But he survived one of the most harrowing events. I forget you know, it was a Soyuz 4 or 5 mission, and he survived a very harrowing reentry. But his career up to that point, once I started researching him, was just constant, like, disappointment. Like, he...
Like, you're going up, but no, yeah, we're canceling that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And it was just... I could just imagine just how frustrating that would be. 'Cause they didn't... They, you know... I mean, you're talking about the right stuff. Our astronauts were famous for 2 years before they launched.
Oh, God, then. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, they were getting parades and
all. And Sally Rand danced naked for them in the Astrodome. Yeah.
And cosmonauts were anonymous before they launched, so they didn't have all the privileges. They didn't have... Yuri Gagarin was an anonymous junior lieutenant when he launched, and nobody knew who he was. And then 48 hours later, he's on top of the mausoleum with Khrushchev.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are fascinating, fascinating characters, I will tell you that. You have a real... I don't want to call it a... In many ways, there is a great deal of romance in this book, not between so many characters, but between men and space. Am I making too much of that, or am I reading too much into that? I sense it from you, too.
Yeah, well, I think it is something we romanticize because it's a blank slate, you know?
Yeah,
and one of the big influences on this book, too, was Andrew Chaikin, who's... whose book on Apollo is just one of the standard texts on Apollo, and he talks about, like, the journey in our heads that we have, you know, of you know, because we haven't experienced that, and everything else in human experience, you know, there's so many stories that, you know, it gets demythologized a little bit, and I think space, that isn't quite the case, because, you know, most of us haven't had the chance to go. So.
Well, you know, and most people's theories and feelings about outer space is come from Star Trek or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they really do. I mean, not from the right stuff. They come from Star Trek and crazier kinds of things. Yours is really grounded, I think, in reality and your embellishment of, or your imaginative take on the reality of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to be empathetic. And I aim with the real people, I aim for respect, but not reverence, is kind of my guideline. It's like, I wouldn't want to have them doing something really shameful that they wouldn't have done, but, you know, you're trying to respect the details of their lives.
And you also want to give them some creative freedom, too.
Yeah.
That's the voice of Jerry Brennan. The book is called Alone on the Moon, A Soviet Lunar Odyssey. If you read this, you will then go back and read the rest in the series. This is not the last in the series, is it?
I think it's the last one. There's some of my space author friends have been prompting me to write more, which is nice. Well, is fantastic to hear.
That's what I need. I need some more space author friends. we'll get some news, and I'll ask Jerry to stick around and talk some more about this book and the other things that are going on at Tortoise Books. We'll be back. Welcome back. I'm going to read another couple paragraphs from Alone on the Moon, A Soviet Lunar Odyssey, Jerry Brennan's latest a book in a series, and perhaps his last, but perhaps not. His space author friends are bugging him to write more. I'm just going to read this, Jerry, then I want you to put it in perspective. It comes from the very middle of the book. He makes his way down deliberately at first, then with exuberance in inverse proportion to the number of rungs left on the ladder. For there is very little left that could go wrong. He stands for a moment on the ladder's footpad. He tests the soil with a single boot. There it is. He has touched the moon. All those alarmist theories, dust like quicksand, ready to swallow him whole the second he steps off. He already thought they were wrong. Now he smiles, for he knows for sure. Then one step, two steps. Frame that for me.
Well,
it's really wonderful writing.
Thank you.
Too, I'll
thank
tell you.
I mean, there were a lot of paranoid theories about what would happen when we landed on the moon. And, you know, I've read a lot of the astronaut memoirs, not nearly as much as some people have, but, like Buzz Aldrin, for instance, there was a theory that the dust would explode once they reoxygenated the lander. And so just, I just tried to, One thing I did learn from journalism school that was useful was that maybe 10% of what you learn ends up going in the story. And, you know, you do so much research and you don't use all of it, but just, you know, you might need to read a book or two just to get that paragraph.
Sure. Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah. You also write in your book, this fine novel, "I've been drawn to space writing in part because it makes plotting simple. Your mission is your story. And to historical writing, because there's no need to come up with characters." That is so well put. And it it certainly gives an incredible foundation. When you think, Jerry Brennan, about space, and I know you must think about it all the time, and I don't know if you dream about it, but what occurs to me is that, I don't know if it frustrates you, when I read about, I am nowhere near the space fan that you are, when I read about, well, let's colonize Mars, let's like build a big city on Mars, and I wonder, it seems almost to me like the moon has been ignored.
Very much so. I mean, it's only 3 days away. You know, if anything goes wrong, like, we can get people back quickly, you know, versus... And the thing about Mars that, I mean, we have a place on Earth that's difficult to live, and you can't go outside very easily, and not a lot of people live there. It's called Antarctica.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't have a million people living in Antarctica, so what makes us think we're going to have a million people on Mars? I mean, it's a nice...
What do you think that is? You think it's like American arrogance, or...
I think it's arrogance. I think it's this billionaire ego thing where people think that they can just and I think too, like, if you've got that much money and you're eager to go somewhere else, like, that tells you what it must be like having a lot of money. Like, you can't just be here and enjoy the earth. Like, you got
to... the people with that kind of money, you can't just be here and use your money to make it easier for other people to live to live on earth. This is your full-time job, is it not?
No, I actually have a 9-to-5.
What do you do?
I work at a law firm in the Loop.
What do you do there?
Like, financial system stuff, database, a lot of... I help out the billers and the accounting team and stuff.
Do the lawyers at the firm know what you do on the side?
A couple of them, yeah.
Okay. So. You're not embarrassed by it, that's for sure.
No.
You can be, Jerry, we've known each other for a while, not well. We're not great friends or anything, but what you've done with Tortoise Books is, I think, really amazing.
Thank you.
I really do. How many books has Tortoise published?
I think we're about at 40 now. I always have to kind of go back and do the math. We've got three on the slate for this fall that are really fantastic.
What are they?
I think this is a memoir called Strip by a woman, Hannah Sword. Just fantastic memoir of, like, growing up and becoming a crystal meth addict and sex work and, you know, just a lot of really crazy stuff. J.M. Coetzee actually blurbed it.
You know,
it was
really
fantastic. And then,
how did that book come to you?
That initially came through a blind submission, and then she actually took it back to shop it around a little bit. And she actually paid me for the editing because she felt bad. But I a little part of me was mad, but I kind of left the door open.
Is she from Chicago?
She lived here for a while, and then she shopped it around and had a couple of things fall through with agents, and then she brought it back, and I paid her the editing money back because I was so happy to have that book back.
Can't wait to read it.
Oh, it's fantastic.
What are the other two?
Christine Sneed edited this fantastic... She edited... it's kind of Me Too and Time's Up themed collection. Fantastic set of female authors.
Essays?
Yeah. Well, no. They're stories, but around that theme. Mm. And that's actually coming out close to the 5th anniversary of, like, the Weinstein allegations coming out.
Wow, 5th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And then we have a book, Lech by Sarah Lipman, which is just a really fantastic abortion-related book, actually, about a woman in upstate New York. Really fantastic. So,
give me your take on the state of the publishing industry these days. It seems insane to me, Jerry.
I was reading some of the Twitter accounts of the Stephen King testifying at the Simon & Schuster proposed merger thing.
Well, Sarah Paretsky has a piece on the editorial page of the Sun Times today.
It's, everybody's trying to consolidate. Everybody's trying to, and it's understandable, raise revenues, lower costs. Sure, that's what businesses do. But, there's no... If there was a formula for this, people would just do the formula.
Yeah.
Harry Potter, was rejected 15 kajillion times. And I think the publisher's kids were like, oh, Wizards and Trains, you should check this out,
Well, I want Tortoise Books to thrive, and I want you to thrive, and I want you people out there to pick up a copy of Alone on the Moon, a Soviet lunar odyssey. You'll be wildly entertained, but also it's a terribly thought-provoking book about ambition and about friendship and about striving. Good luck with this and good luck with Tortoise.
Thanks so much, Rick.
It's always great to talk to you, and I can't wait to talk to those other authors about the new books when they come out.